The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
What would Reagan do? That's a question that conservatives ask a lot. Maybe they're asking what he would do right now about what's happening on college campuses around the country. He probably wouldn't have a lot of patience for it. Back in 1966, when he was running for governor of California, there had been a lot of demonstrations against the Vietnam War on the University of California campus at Berkeley. Now, he didn't question their right to protest. He just didn't like their methods, and he called on the administrators to kick them out. That issue and saying welfare bums should be made to get a job, and I think he did refer to them as welfare bums, that had a lot to do with getting him elected. Then in 1969, on the Berkeley campus again, students were rioting about some construction that was supposed to happen there. They were trying to block the construction, prevent it from happening. So Reagan visited the campus and spoke to a bunch of administrators.
Those people told you for days in advance that if the university sought to go ahead with that construction, they were going to physically destroy the university.
University is a public institution.
That's right. But the university,
its own community, and for the community of Berkeley that live around it.
All of it began the first time some of you who know better and are old enough to know better let young people think that they had the right to choose the laws they would obey as long as they were doing it in the name of social protest.
Then he stood up and walked out. And then a few years later, he was elected president twice. Well, when we come back, Hans von Spakovsky, legal expert from the Heritage Foundation, will be here to analyze what happened today at the Supreme Court with the presidential immunity issue being debated. And in our second half hour, today's NFL draft day. Now, I really don't care who the Steelers draft, but I used to care a lot, and I was involved in a job that required me to do that. And local TV news departments used to care a lot, too. I don't know if they do as much anymore. Back then, when I was covering it, especially in the early days, the competition was fierce between the three stations. Well, John Fetko, formerly of Channel 11, will be here, and we are going to tell some war stories about draft day. Stick around. Well, today was a big day at the Supreme Court. The issue was immunity. When does the president have it, and does Donald Trump have it, or did he have it? Hans von Spakovsky is the manager of the Heritage Foundation's Election Law Reform Initiative. He's a senior fellow for legal and judicial studies at Heritage, and he joins us now. Hans, always good to have you on. Thank you.
Well, thanks for having me.
So, you're the man, I guess, to talk to here. I don't know how much you were able to watch the proceedings today, but what was the Trump team's game plan going in, do you think, and do you think it worked?
I actually listened to all 3 hours of the arguments. And but let me tell you, that was three times as long as a case normally gets. So the justices asked a lot of questions. Here was the basic difference between the two sides. The Justice Department came in and said, no president is entitled to any immunity from criminal prosecution, even when he's engaging in official acts. When questioned sharply about this, the Justice Department lawyer said, well, a president is entitled to special protections, which means that if he gets criminally prosecuted, he can try to raise as a defense that he was acting under his core responsibilities in Article 2, and he can object to being prosecuted. The other side, Trump's lawyers, came in and said, look, a president is entitled to immunity from criminal prosecution for all of his official acts. And what are his official acts? Well, court should give the president basically wide discretion in his official acts. And they said, look, if you don't give that to a president, How is a president going to act? He's constantly going to be in fear when he's president if he takes particular acts that he may be criminally prosecuted. And the guy gave all these examples, the lawyer gave all these examples, including, by the way, if you'll recall, John, remember the drone attacks that Obama ordered that killed U.S. citizens? It was pretty clear to me the liberal justices pretty much agree with the Justice Department. They think there should be no immunity. I think the conservative justices were along the lines of there should be immunity for official acts, not for personal actions of the president while he's president. And the issue is, how do you determine whether something is an official act rather than a personal act? For that, the lawyer for Trump said, look, it's got to be some kind of objective test. You can't have a subjective test where you're allowing people to examine the personal motives of the president. And that's a pretty strong argument. Can you imagine a situation where you give the power to 12 jurors anywhere in the country, in any court, that they would sit there and determine whether actions that the former president took were personal in nature or official actions, and therefore they can or can't prosecute him? That would be an absurd result and an outrageous one. So I think what we're going to get is some kind of test from the Supreme Court on how to figure that out. And then I think they'll send it back down to the lower court and say, here, use this test, apply it to this indictment, and figure out what were official actions of the president, what were personal actions.
So what would a test look like or sound like?
I don't know. that's a really tough question. I think one of the suggestions that actually Samuel Alito made was that a court would look at what the president did and say, if there was any plausible reason for the president to act as he did in an official capacity, then it's an official act. So that would give very wide leeway to a president to, you know, conduct his affairs in office.
What about the fact that it was already covered by the impeachment? And that's kind of the mechanism that's for this. And then the Senate had a chance to convict him of a crime and did not.
Well, in fact, that was a key issue that was brought up by Trump's lawyers. And they pointed to the fact that the impeachment clause, judgment clause, if you look at it in the Constitution, what it says is that a person convicted is subject to indictment and trial. In other words, only if you are convicted by the Senate and impeached and therefore removed from office can you then be criminally prosecuted. And so what Trump's lawyers were saying was, look, he was acquitted, therefore he can't be criminally prosecuted for what he did.
And how do you think the court will accept that?
Well, if they go by the exact language in the Constitution, they'll accept that argument. The Justice Department argued against it, saying, "Oh, no, that's not what the text says." But again, you know, we're just going to see what happens. Remember, the Supreme Court has never looked at or examined this issue. The only precedent we've really got for this is the fact that in 1982. In a case called Nixon versus Fitzgerald, the Supreme Court did say that former presidents are immune from all civil liability. So you can't sue a president saying, oh, well, when you signed this particular executive order when you were president, you caused me personal damages and you cost me money. You can't do that. The president's got absolute immunity. And Trump's lawyer kept pointing to that case saying you should follow that same reasoning and apply it to criminal liability.
And so, you know, you're not supposed to, a president is not supposed to be subject to bribery or extortion or any of those things when he's in office. And if he does not have the immunity that the Trump team is claiming that he has, what kind of a can of worms does that open up down the road where someone from the opposing party could come in as, on an issue that they're really passionate about and say, listen, if you don't do X, Y, and Z, we are going to, the minute you get out of office, we're going to see that you're charged with X, Y, and Z.
That is exactly the problem that we will face if the Supreme Court says there's no immunity. And anybody who doubts that'll happen obviously hasn't been paying attention to politics for the last 10 years.
Yeah, but that is the danger. And is that something right. that the court has to consider, or does the court only consider? Does the court only look at the Constitution and interpret that the way they think it should be interpreted, each individual justice, of course, and then make a decision based on that? Or are they even supposed to consider the consequences, or are they just supposed to consider what the law is or is not?
Well, the consequences were consequences were something that were discussed when the Constitution was being framed. In fact, the lawyer for Trump, John Stower, who's very good, by the way, he cited statements from the Constitutional Convention by George Washington and by Benjamin Franklin about this particular issue. So I think that's part of what they need to take into account when they're looking at the structure of the Constitution, which Trump's lawyer says obviously requires immunity from criminal prosecution.
Just a couple of days ago, I was talking to someone here about a case in Oregon where the court out there, I don't know if it was the Supreme Court, the Oregon Supreme Court, I forget, but they ruled that, I think it was the Ninth District, that's what it was. They ruled that it was unconstitutional to kick homeless people off the street because it was a cruel and unusual punishment.
Right.
And in the testimony, one of the justices said, well, they were feeling sorry for this person. If they're kicked out, you know, they're told they can't sleep in that tent, where can they go to sleep? And I'm not an attorney, but it seems to me that's why I'm kind of applying it to what you were just talking about here with the consequences. I don't think it's supposed to be whether you feel sorry for the person or not. You're supposed to look at the Constitution, look at the law, and see if it's being applied properly.
Well, look, I agree with you, but that was the argument that was being made by Trump's lawyers, that the immunity derives from both what's called the executive vesting clause, which puts the power of the executive branch in the hands of the president, so he's the final decision maker on it, and prior precedent about separation of powers. And that separation of powers argument is one. One that's been recognized for a long time by the courts, in that the courts can't be used to question the discretionary authority being exercised by the president. I mean, the best example of this is if the president believes that we have been attacked and we should go to war. Yeah, Congress has a role in that, but the judiciary, the courts, they don't have a role in deciding, oh, well, the president's decision about that, well, that was wrong. And therefore, we're going to order the president. He can't do that. That's not the way our separation of powers works.
We're talking to Hans von Spakovsky of the Heritage Foundation. I want to read you something I saw earlier this week as someone leading into this. This is Daniel R. Street. I don't know if you're familiar with him. He's with American Mind, I think, but I assume he's an attorney. He writes like one. He says that this indictment repeatedly cites public speeches and social media posts to buttress its ridiculous claims. Under Federal Rule of Criminal Procedure 7C1, the indictment, quote, must be plain, concise, and definite written statement. This one is anything but. Does that make any sense to you, what I just read?
Oh, yeah. Yes, it does. And look, there were a lot of questions asked about this indictment by the justices. But look, I've talked before about you know, what a bogus indictment this is. And in fact, in the arguments today, Brett Kavanaugh specifically said, look, the two of the federal laws under which Trump's been charged by Jack Smith are so vague that without presidential immunity, prosecutors could go after almost anything that a president does. And he's right about that.
Well, this, for a layman, it seems like a slam dunk case to me. I know that that's a dangerous thing for me to say, but, you know, that I have no credibility on the subject. But it just seems like almost a common sense kind of thing. It's you can't run a government that way. You can't run a country that way, where the leader is, everything that he does is subject to prosecution 20 minutes after he leaves office, if somebody wants to, you know, come after him.
Oh, well, look, I agree with you. But you know what the answer was? The Justice Department's lawyer, when Kavanaugh and others raised this claim that a president could be subject to constant criminal prosecutions, his answer was, oh, you need to trust us at the Justice Department. There are so many layers there to prevent abusive prosecution. I'm surprised people in the courtroom didn't start laughing when he said that.
Yeah, Justice Kagan, I guess it was, she questioned Trump's attorney about a president ordering the military to conduct a coup and if he would have immunity for that. Do you think the Trump attorney's answer will make it past the three liberals on that one?
Well, Matthew, I think that question was insulting to our military. I mean, quite frankly, it was insulting. That's never happened in the entire history of the U.S. It's not a realistic. It's one of those extreme hypotheticals. It's totally unrealistic. And it's insulting to the military because, as you know, our military has a long, honorable history. They take an oath to support the Constitution, mm-hmm. not the president. And there is no way that any of our military leaders would obey an unlawful or illegal order like that. It's just not going to happen.
Well, as we're finishing up here with Hans von Spakovsky, so is this, when it's all said and done, again, if I'm coming from a layman's view of this, it seems to me it's just a formality. It's going to be another 6-3 win for Trump, or maybe somebody's going to cave on the conservative side and make it 5-4, and neither side is going to sway the other, and it's all going to end up turning out exactly the way everybody basically predicted it would?
No, I think there's going to be a compromise between the two sides of this that the court come out with, and how they're going to vote, I just can't predict. All I can say is they just spent 3 hours, every single one of them was asking very intense questions, and I would hate to try to predict how they're going to come out, but I think it's going to be someplace in the middle between the two sides.
But if it's in the middle, where do we go from there? You said it would go down to they'll throw it back down to a lower court, but how long does that process take? And what does it start all over again down there, or just based on what the parameters they give that lower court?
Yeah, I think it may start all over again, because I think what will happen if they, for example, come up with a test and say, lower court, determine what were personal actions, what were official actions, is the trial court judge is a biased liberal. So she's going to basically say, oh, everything was personal, nothing was official. Mm-hmm. And then what's going to happen is the Trump team will once again appeal and say her decision making is wrong on that. So I don't know when trial is going to happen, but I seriously doubt it'll be before the November election.
So finishing up here, just last thing, whatever their decision is, and it's expected in June, I guess, we're not going to see any real end of the drama here then, other than it won't happen before the election.
Maybe it'll happen before we'll get a decision from the court by the end of June, but that may not be the final answer to the immunity question.
So the fun has just begun.
Yes.
Hans, I really appreciate you. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, John. But by the way, Trump wasn't in the Supreme Court today because the judge in New York wouldn't let him go.
Yeah, I didn't want to go there. I'm out of time, but it's unbelievable. It's insanity, but it's obviously going to continue. And I'm always glad to have you around to try to, I don't know, bring some sanity to it. Thanks, Hans.
Thanks for having me.
Okay,
bye-bye.
That's Hans von Spakovsky of the Heritage Foundation. I'll be right back. So how about some sports to finish off here today? It's the NFL draft tonight at 8 o'clock. I will be watching, but I have no idea who the Steelers are going to draft. I don't care who they draft. I used to care a lot. I don't anymore. And when they do draft a guy in the first round tonight, I will probably know nothing about him. But it is draft day. And it reminded me of some of the things that used to go on when I was working in sports at KDKA-TV and also at Channel 4, and things were crazy. I don't think they're as crazy now because I don't think the stations care as much as they used to. Well, John Fedko remembers. He worked at Channel 11, WPXI, started in 1987, was there a long time. So he was there for the draft day wars, and he joins us now. John, how you doing?
I'm doing awesome, John. It is always an honor and a pleasure to talk to a living legend like you. Things are completely, completely, completely different now in many regards when it comes to the NFL draft and coverage.
Yeah, so here's the thing. You told me earlier that you started in 1987. I knew it was right around there. So I was in my second year at KDKA-TV back then. What I remember about that year, and this is what we used to do, and you can tell me if this was going on at Channel 11. I think it was. On draft day, in 1987, we probably had a four-man sports team at that point. Now they have one and a half at each station, so or maybe two. But the producers would be in charge of deciding who the guys were that the Steelers were likely to draft, and then they would have to make reservations for flights to the various cities where these players were going to be on draft day so that the instant that player was drafted, we would leave the station, head for the airport, and fly into the city where this guy was. Did you guys do the same thing?
Absolutely, John. We had a four-man sports department. We had two full-time producers, a full-time photographer. And then not only that, on draft day, because it was so gigantic, Dee Thompson would also work the sports department. In fact, Dee was in charge of getting that trip ready to go, and he would go on that trip.
Now, he was a maniac. He loved the Steelers and loved covering the Steelers.
He was such a great guy, great hard worker.
Yep.
So it was a five-man sports department for the NFL draft. And that's exactly what we did. Now, we would try to fly the guy in here, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
And a couple of times we did it. I don't know if all the stations put money in a pot and brought him in themselves, but we tried to get the guy here. But I remember in the 80s and 90s, we would absolutely be ready to fly a second if it was announced.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. I think flying the guy in was the nuclear bomb in the war,
yep,
because you guys did it at Channel 11, and we were always ready to fly wherever, and the only way you beat that, if everybody's doing that, the only way you beat that is to fly the guy in here, and you be the guy in charge, and you put him on a private jet, of course, and fly him in. It just seems ridiculous to even talk about it now, but that's what happened. Now, I remember a scene where back then this was pre-9/11, so you could hang around in the airport at the gate and wait for people
Absolutely.
To get off the plane. You couldn't do that now.
Yep.
So I remember I wasn't there, but I was working back at the station and saw the video. I want to say it was Keith Gary, a guy. I don't remember exactly what year that was, but I want to say it was him. Might have been somebody else. But whoever the draft pick was flown in by Channel 11, and Channel 11's news director was out there to meet him when he got off and was coming off the gate and getting ready to leave the airport. And we had cameras out there. Channel 4 had cameras out there. And whoever it was from Channel 11, who was like a boss, he was in management. He wasn't a reporter. He stood in front of the guy as he was walked in front of the guy and held his sport coat up so you couldn't see his face, so that whatever the other two stations couldn't get a shot of him, which of course we put on the air anyway. But you know, it was fun. I'll say that it was the whole thing was it was fun. The competition was fun, and I think those of us who were working in it, including you and Sammy Nover and everybody else, we laughed about it. And we laughed at our bosses for how ridiculous they were about it.
Of course, and he was big time with the Steelers. Joe Gordon, the PR guy there, just loved him. You know, he was doing NFL play-by-play on NBC at that point.
Yeah.
So, you know, he had a lot of pull, and he was a very aggressive guy when it came to management. So it was great to have a guy like that in our sports department who had that kind of pull. And that meant we were you know, going to spend top dollar. So, you know, Channel 11 at that point, you know, when I got there, John, it was a great time to be at Channel 11 because, as many people in our age group remember, Channel 11 was a flat-out dog.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, there was a distant number 3 to 2 and 4 for years. And right around that time in 87, new management came in, led by a legendary general manager named John Howell, and turned the thing around. And it wasn't a secret how he did it, John. It was how you turn anything around in the America we used to know. He did it with money.
Mm-hmm.
That's how he did it. And you know, you mentioned one of the reasons, you know, that helped us. Now, that behavior by the news director was crazy. But you know what? It was a time when it was capitalism still worked. And you put a lot of money and you put a lot of effort into it. We all took pride in you know, going to every single playoff game. Remember, John, in the 90s, during the Stanley Cup playoff runs, we were at every single game. You, me, or Nova, or somebody. There wasn't a playoff game on the road.
No, I covered every game
every
and every practice.
One.
I covered every game.
Every single one. It was,
in 91 and 92, every game, every
that's
practice.
Correct. And I John, I say this with all sincerity. I'm 100% positive about what I am about to say on the air with you right now. I'm 100% positive about it. If you and I, one or the other, just me and you, I think we're the only two in this town that I can say this about, and I'm dead serious about this. If you and I were put in charge of a local TV station today, pick one of them, pick any three of them. You put me and you, either John Fedko or John Steigerwald, in charge of the station, I'm going to flat out guarantee that we would wipe the competition off the face of the earth within 3 days.
I think I agree with you. You know why I say that? Not because I think I'm a genius or you're a genius.
No,
it's such an obvious thing.
It is, John. I could do a 10-hour show on this.
Yeah.
It's part of the collapse of this entire country. I'm not specifically blaming anybody, although I kind of am.
Yeah, I know.
Management and television in this town. John, it's so easy to see how to win in this town, and nobody's doing it. This reminds me, John, very much of when I came in here in 87 and saw the opening in high school football.
Yep.
But now, if I even watch local news, and it's almost unwatchable, it is unwatchable.
No,
but
I never
watch it. I'm looking at these people going, you give me that station for 3 years, and I will destroy the competition.
Yeah.
And I know you could do it, too.
Yeah, it's
now,
just
I'm not
a matter
waste
of
everybody's time on how that's done.
Yeah,
but there's a formula that would work in this town that is a guarantee win, and nobody's doing it.
No,
nobody's doing it. And these management people, they don't have the grasp of the history of this town. It starts with that. You got to know what has worked in this town, and don't tell me that's not going to work again. Because I don't care about streaming, and I don't care about you can watch television on your phone, and I don't care about cable television. What works in this town has not changed since 1987.
You're right.
What has changed is these crazy, idiotic consultants have no idea what they're talking about when they tell these management people what works in Pittsburgh. That I'm positive about.
Yeah, and here's the thing. Here's an example, okay? A perfect example. Now, just a couple of weeks ago, was it last weekend, two weeks ago, we had a local kid playing in the Masters, okay?
Huh, a local Tiger Woods!
Yeah, and he was paired...
With Tiger Woods,
yeah, he was paired with Tiger Woods, okay. Now,
Tiger Woods!
If I'm working at KDKA TV and we have that story pops up where there's a local kid, the game is the tournament is covered by CBS, so it's on KDKA, and there's a local kid who's going to be I think one of two amateurs playing in the Masters. Kid goes to Duquesne and Central Catholic. He's from Upper St. Clair. Or no, he goes to Ohio State and Central Catholic. Kid from Upper St. Clair. He's the kid who's caddying with him is his high school golfing buddy, and they end up getting, I don't think you knew this at the time, but he ended up getting paired with Tiger Woods on Sunday, the last round of the matches. So here's the thing. You know Michael Chalik. He was a spectacularly good photographer, and he and I worked a lot together, absolutely, covered everything. He and I would have been there on Thursday. Well, first of all, I would have gone into the news director, and I would have said, and this is how long the conversation would have lasted. I would have said, you know, a month or so ago, listen, there's a local kid who's going to be playing in the Masters. He's from Upper St. Clair. He went to Ohio State with Central Catholic. He's going to be playing in the Masters, okay? I think we should go to Augusta and cover it. She would say, okay, that would be the end of the discussion. That's it. That's how long it would last. I know not one of the three stations went on the road and covered that story.
That is pathetic.
Spectacular,
John, that
story.
Says it, John, that says it all. But this is a microcosm of what's happening in America. It's like people are so confused. They're so out of touch with what worked. It's a microcosm of the whole country.
Yeah.
The local news scene.
Here's another story, okay? Now, I put up on Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it, a couple of times, but I put it up there that there was a story about, you know, Riley Gaines and the men competing against women and all that stupidity. And what I put up there was that I would have a real problem working in TV, a local TV news right now, because I would have two choices, not to cover this story or cover it and get fired. That would be my choice, because they're not touching it. Sport, do you ever, I don't listen to The Fan much. I think it's pretty much unlistenable most of the time. But they're not touching, that story's not being touched by local sports. How can it not be?
Well, this gets to ESPN, which is unwatchable. And I know my sons watch it, and I'm constant, and they watch it because they love sport. They love baseball. Mostly they're watching baseball TV. But when they're watching these idiots on ESPN, and they're all morons. ESPN is talentless. I'm talking talentless across the board. It's unwatchable. And I'm looking at my sons going, why are you watching these idiots? They don't even know what they're talking about. Half the time they're talking about politics, and it's woke politics.
Right.
And most
they're
of them
clueless.
Are racist. It's unwatchable, John. And
yeah.
it even gets down to the NFL. It's unwatchable. And again, we could do a 10-hour program on this, but I tell my sons, you know, they're both pro athletes. I say, you guys have no idea what the NFL was like. I mean, I guess you could go back and YouTube what a game in the 1970s was, but this isn't the NFL. this isn't football. It's been so feminized. It is, the rules have destroyed that game. The NFL is a complete and utter joke. It is not the same game, and it's not the same type of athlete. The quarterbacking is John Horrendous with a capital H. Yeah. I have never seen such bad quarterbacking in my life. High school quarterbacks were better in the 70s than in quarterbacks in the NFL right now, and I am not kidding you.
But let me ask you something.
Football right now is absolutely horrific. That goes for college and pros, especially the pros. It is terrible.
How much?
With a capital T.
How much criticism of the Steelers do you think you'd be able to get away with right now on any of the three local?
Steelers are lucky I'm not doing a sports talk show.
What's that?
It's an absolute joke. They're pathetic, along with the rest of the NFL. And I'm going to tell you something. This is what I would start out by saying, John. I'm 64 years old. and I'll go into that locker room and look those guys in the eyes. None of those guys probably ever even did an Oklahoma drill.
No.
None of them probably ever even did it because they've legislated it out of the game because of these clown doctors and this nonsense with the concussion stuff. Absolute nonsense. And that's why, you know, Kenny Pickett was so brittle. As soon as they drafted him, I looked at him. I said, this kid's going to last even in this feminized NFL about 3 weeks. And how many times was he injured?
Yeah.
If you're Kenny Pickett and I'm his father, I'm looking at that kid and going, dude, you better put 20 pounds of muscle on right now or they're going to break you in half.
Well, he didn't. He's gone.
This is Jack Lambert would take the NFL quarterbacks today, and they would last about two plays, and that includes Tom Brady.
Oh, yeah.
Tom Brady didn't have to play under the rules that Roger Staubach and Terry Bradshaw had to play in 1979.
No.
Brady would have lasted about three games in the 1979 season, and he'd have been out for the year.
Some of the hits that were taken, you know, before they changed the rules and everything, if someone were to hit Tom Brady like that, there'd be a lawsuit filed before halftime.
That is correct.
He'd call his lawyer.
He had a concussion protocol in about three plays. John, yeah. I played football. I didn't play college or pros. But I played high school a lot, and I was knocked silly about 20 times. And I'm fine. I'm 64 years old, and I'm as sharp as a tack.
You signed fine to me.
Concussion stuff is a bunch of nonsense, John. It's a bunch of absolute nonsense.
Well, it's draft. Are you going to watch the draft tonight?
No, I'm not going to watch it. The NFL is a complete joke. I have no interest in the NFL draft.
Well,
if I was going to do a sports talk show, I'd watch it. But I'm not interested in these clowns. The NFL is a joke.
Well, I'm disappointed because
John. Only reason it's surviving is because of, and they knew it. The only reason it's surviving is because people bet on it.
Yeah. Oh, no question.
That's the only reason the NFL survives.
Well, I'm out of time, I'm out of time, so I guess you won't be coming to my draft party tonight painted with black and gold.
I could care less about the NFL draft. I won't watch one second of it.
Hey, John.
My son played minor league baseball tonight in San Antonio, so that's one reason. But even if he wasn't playing, I wouldn't watch one second of it.
Good. I hope I've got to have you on again. I'm out of time. We'll do this again. I want to see if I can get you to express an opinion the next time, though. Yeah. Get you to call.
You're the greatest, John.
So are you, man. I'll talk to you later. I'll be right back.
Bye.
That's John Fedko. Yeah, we got to get John Fedko to come out of his shell a little bit. He's shy. It's just hard to get him to express himself. Got to have him on more. He's actually entertaining. But here's the thing. This is why I like doing this show. As I said, and as I think you probably know, if you've been listening to the show, you know that I did sports for a long time, and some people ask me if I miss doing it, and I don't one bit, by the way. I don't miss having to worry about the NFL draft tonight. What I do enjoy is the fact that I can watch the draft tonight for as long as I want or as little as I want and go to bed if I'm bored by it instead of having to stay up and, you know, keeping up on everything and being able to report on it. But what I like about being able to do this show in the last hour, I spoke to Hans von Spakovsky, who's a really smart legal mind and a guy who actually worked in the Justice Department and is seen all over national TV all the time, especially on Fox, talking about this kind of stuff. And we talked about an issue that could affect the United States of America, how it's resolved. It could affect the United States of America, I don't know, for the next 250 years or so. We talked about that, and then we had a discussion about the NFL draft, which means nothing, really, when you get right down to it, to anybody except the people who are drafted, and it's a big day for them. But so that's kind of like what I like doing. Sometimes I wonder if I don't do enough shows like today where I have to do something that really matters in the first half hour and something that maybe is sports-related or entertainment-related in the second half hour. I don't know. But I just when I have a show like today, I appreciate being able to do both. And I really appreciate John Fedko coming on to close it on a lighter note. And we'll have him on again. And I'm sure we're going to have Hans on again because the insanity continues. And I'll talk to you tomorrow.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.